accession number 20618, Reel 3.
General Richardson, Reel 3.
No, all right, once we got ourselves sorted out by other GPO, Basil Sagan and I went into, we had a recce gun position, which was in Germany, and there we were actually with a Dutch family near Brunssum. And when we got to this, there was nobody there. It had been, they'd all gone. There was a certain amount of, I don't know, quite stuff in the cellar, but there were chickens going around. And so I can remember we thought we'd better capture a chicken each, actually, and take it back to our hosts who were looking after us. I can remember wringing this chicken's neck, actually, and Basil wrung his chicken's neck, actually, and when we got back in our 1500 weight and opened the sack for him to take his chicken out, it walked out of the sack. He looked as though he'd seen a ghost. However, it was all right. We wrung its neck again. The families were delighted to be given a chicken, actually, which was on their rations. So then we had this battle in getting ourselves sorted out in that particular area. We were there for the winter, and things were then delayed because of the Arnhem operation, the Ardennes operation, which the Germans, God knows why they did it, but anyway, they tried to push through, and eventually were sealed off. And we then had to clear an area, and it was snow, it was cold, but anyway, we managed it all. Basically, up to the Rhine in the south, which we would then hand over to the Americans, because we went up to the north, we went back to Nijmegen. And then there was that great, tremendous advance, which I suppose we must have done in February or early March, February, I suppose, through the Rauschwald, through Goch and Cleve. I lost one of my SPs by a direct hit at that stage, actually, in Goch. We got down and we met with the Americans coming up from the south, and then we got ourselves organised for the Rhine crossing.
What did that involve?
The Rhine crossing?
No, the organisation for the Rhine crossing.
Oh, well, we'd got ourselves sorted out. They got some swimming tanks in and various things like that, because the great thing was that the armour was to get across early. We also had a stack of ammunition for the most enormous fire plan, and the airborne landing went over the top of us too. I had a slight debacle actually before leaving my gun position at that place when we were told to move, because somebody set fire to the barn, which was the back end of the farm. We set the whole place alight, actually, but I managed to get everybody out. So there was a bit of a bonfire when we left there. But apart from that, we'd fired this enormous fire plan. They'd built a bridge for us by that stage. So we got our guns across, and we were driving up the whole of the German Dutch border. It was fairly hard going, actually. We had some fairly fierce battles. Halfway up there, we were in a gun position, and we discovered nearby a factory producing crates of alcohol called Hazy Luna in bottles. Lethal stuff, actually. I managed to sort of get the boys under control, actually, and make quite certain that at least half of them were sober. It really was only good for boiling eggs in. You could pour some of this stuff into the lid of a cigarette tin, actually, and lighted with a blue flame. Terrible stuff. Anyway,
Hazy Luna.
Hazy Luna, it was called. That was right, I remember that. Anyway, we got up and we approached Bremen from the west. But that was decided that we shouldn't go to Bremen from the west. We crossed the Weser and went round to the east of Bremen and attacked Bremen with 43 Div from the left, from the east. And then we went up the road to Bremervoorde. Funny enough, I forgot really, at the very beginning, at D-Day, having lost that gun in the crater, another gun had a broken clutch fork, which was a bit difficult for it to go because it getting the thing disengaged and that sort of thing. And I was actually given two replacement SPs. We managed to mend the one with the Bowden clutch fork, so I actually had five self-propelled guns for the whole war. One, in fact, was used by the fitter gun. It wasn't in action. I only had four in action, but I had a spare one. So that when I had prematures and things like that and all things getting destroyed, I'd always got an extra gun. That spare gun I had until the last week of the war, when it was blown up on a mine. That was it. So I finished with four. And from there, at the end of the war, I was in fact on leave for the last week of the war, because I was the last person to get leave. And I was engaged to be married at that time. I had the most fabulous leave that ever was. And when I got back, they said, Tony, you're going to be a regular. And I said, yes. They said, they want regulars to learn to fly. And I said, well, what's it all about? They said, they'll get you home in 3 weeks or so. And it's 9 months in England. I said, put my name down at once. I got married that summer, actually, while I was on the AOP course. But before that happened, we moved down to Hanover, which we took over from the Americans. I was sent on the advance party. And I took over a school which was in a disgraceful state because some American soldiers had been in it. And I managed to get some Germans from the flats opposite. And I said, I want you to come and clean this place up. And I've got about an hour and a half until they turn up. And they said, well, either all of us come or none. So I said, well, you'll all come in that case. And so I got the whole jolly lot. They cleaned the place up immaculately for me. The windows were broken and things like that. But apart from that, we had it nice and tidy.
Where was this place?
This was in Hanover. Then when we were down in Hanover, all the guns were repainted and sorted out. But we had to try and sort out. We had one battery was in charge of a prisoner of war camp. Another was, but we were in charge of the town. There was a curfew on and we used to go around collecting people after 9 o'clock, actually. You'd go around in a jeep with a 3-tonner, and we would just say, Warum sind Sie auf den Straßen nach 9 Uhr, whatever they said. You said, Marks next, and put him in the back of the truck. We didn't have anybody on the streets in 24 hours, actually, after curfew by that stage. But we then had to sort out the displaced persons. These were, I suppose, ex-Russian POWs and various things like that. They were dreadful. They were in cells. Half of Hanover had been knocked down, but they were... I'd never known human beings actually really disintegrating into living like animals, which was exactly how they were living. However, we managed to get them.
In what sense were they living like animals?
Well, they had tins, they were fighting, their food was eaten by hand, they were sleeping, they were disgustingly dirty, they were, I don't know, but anyway, it was... I thought, well, human can just change like that. Anyway, it didn't matter.
Were they a threat to the local Germans?
Well, what we wanted to do was to stop them going and raiding the countryside. So I had to find out how many they were, where they were. Actually, I found a Russian officer who said knew roughly where they were. And then we provided them with food. And we got them basically under control. We put on a sort of Buckingham Palace guard on the Kurhaus, apart from that, eventually all the weapons, all the guns, were marched out past General Dempsey. I wasn't there, I'd left there then, and they finished up in Kiel, where they were looking after matters up there and organising the Kiel Yacht Club. But that was the way it had been during the war. I went back home. And learned to fly.
Was there at this time any fear of a German resistance movement?
No. In fact, we really were collecting Germans who were escaping from the Russians, sort of keeping them under control. There was, of course, non-fraternization was the rule of the thing, so we were to sort of fair with the Germans and organizing them because they were. All they needed to be told what to do, and they would do it, actually. They were perfectly good. No, there wasn't any trouble about that at all. But of course, eventually getting it under control, but I wasn't there for the control. I was back home and got posted in 1946 to northern Italy. Venezia Giulia, where we had a corps consisting of the 1st Armoured Division, the 56th London Division, and the 84th American Airborne Division, bless their hearts. There we were manning the Morgan Line, and we had a brigade down in Pola. And as I was flying, and we had a flight on the Lido at Venice, and we had two aircraft up in Venice, in Vienna. And I used to fly the mail down to Pola and go and sort out things in Trieste. And then the Yugoslavs, bless their hearts, deployed 12 divisions against us in battle stations. So John Harding, who was the Corps commander, 13 Corps, bless his heart, we put on the most marvellous parade in Trieste. I think we drove the tanks around three times. And the Yugoslavs thought there were too many of us, and so they called it off.
So it was a bluff?
Well, basically, they were determined, actually, that they didn't like the Morgan Line. They wanted to have more room. They wanted to capture Venezia Giulia, I think.
No, anyway. I mean, was it the bluff by Harding?
Oh, yes, yes. I mean, it was just... We put on an air show as well and got all the aircraft down from Germany, we flew in the air show. We flew on the march pass, too, actually, in Trieste. The squadron sky dive over the chute and looting base. No. But we always had a cruiser and two destroyers in Trieste at the time too, and we were always we practiced shooting them, whether they were American or whether they were British, and we used to take them out to sea and control their fire because they would have given fire support from the sea if anything had gone wrong. We had quite a lot of stuff. Apart from that, actually, we were running race meetings and riding horses left over by the Germans and having a jolly time.
What unit did you belong to by now?
That was the 654th Air OP Squadron. A squadron, actually, of course, Air OP squadrons are an Air Force unit commanded by an Army officer and with Army pilots. It only had an Air Force adjutant and an Air Force equipment officer.
So was this the Army Air Corps?
No, it was before the days of the Army Air Corps. This is Air OP was an artillery unit. In fact, it had, your little aircraft, you had an Auster, a three-tonner, and a Jeep. And you had a driver-operator drove the Jeep, and a driver-mechanic drove the three-tonner. You could actually put the aeroplane on the three-tonner if you tried. And we had a fitter airframe and a fitter engine, who were Air Force. And we could deploy, if we wanted to, single aircraft, but in fact, actually, we normally went as a flight. 654 eventually went from northern Italy to Palestine, but I wasn't with them then, because I had to go back to the Military College of Science to be educated. And I spent 2 years at the Military College of Science, becoming a technical staff officer.
Did you ever see active service again after this?
Not really. Basically, I speaking went back from Germany to staff jobs, although I commanded, in the end, 7th Parachute Regiment RHA, and I had a battery in Bahrain, a battery in Aden, and a battery back in Aldershot on standby. I did, of course, visit my battery in Aden, who were there holding the fort while 19 Regiment handed over to 1st RHA, but a battery of airborne soldiers actually was doing a regiment's job, and they were doing it jolly well. We were dealing with whatever happened out there. Bahrain, we used to go and do exercises down at Sharjah, but it wasn't very much my college. I was posted after the staff college, which I went to as well, to Malaya, but they wouldn't let me go because I would, as a technical staff officer, they wanted me back home. After all, I was, in fact, director of Army Aviation and head of the Army Air Corps when I was a general, 70. 1 to 74, and of course visited my Army Aviation all over Northern Ireland, Berlin, Hong Kong. I also was, earlier on than that, I'd been working with telling the Americans what they're to do. It was in 58, and I worked in land air warfare. But no, that was, I had a lovely time in the Army.
Had you, during the war, planned an army career?
I was always going into the army, yeah.
When
I hadn't planned anything, no, but my father suggested that it would be... He, in fact, was in the Royal Army Service Corps, actually, and suggested that I ought to join the artillery, because he thought I had the intelligence to do it.
When you were fighting the Germans in the Second World War, what was your own attitude towards the German soldier?
I thought they were very tough opponents and very good soldiers, actually. I couldn't understand why they were going on fighting, but they were very determined and very brave men. And they had very good equipment too, actually, because their tanks took quite a bit of knocking out. But we had such enormous artillery superiority that this, in fact, really was what gave us the edge.
Did you ever get wounded in the Second World War?
Nope. And I was very fortunate with my soldiers too. They got hurt, but not much. And so there we were. We'd landed at the very beginning. We'd been through Normandy. We had first across the Seine. We were very near the earliest into Nijmegen, and we were fairly early across the Rhine. But and we'd been in the front of 30 Corps from the beginning to the end.
Did the Second World War change your attitudes in any way?
I don't think so. No, I think the one extra, of course, war is an odd thing. From going in the invasion of France, from leaving England in a fairly normal situation, actually, as far as you know, life was concerned, and arriving 24 hours later, with people being killed around you, was in fact a major transition, actually. Apart from the fact that you were... I probably only had about 7 hours sleep in the first 7 days, actually, but because you were living on adrenaline, and it was an extraordinary change in the way you looked at things.
In what
lived.
Sense?
Well, it was the standards which you have. I mean, were you... You didn't expect it at home, actually, with people being killed around you. But here you had people being killed and you were people being hurt. And it was... And life was different. Admittedly, we were busy at whatever we were doing. And you got on and did things and served. I think the major change came after the war. I had been brought up to run an empire, and eventually we have given it away. I'm very proud of our Commonwealth, because especially as my last job was 3.5 years in India as a defence advisor, the members of the Commonwealth respect us, they like the way we do things, and they continue to do things the way we try to teach them. And I think that's fantastic.